Have you ever heard that communication is the key to a great relationship? Probably so. I, however, beg to differ. Join me as we begin a mini-series on one of our life's key threes, which is being relationally smart.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back, my friend. When this podcast originally airs, it is back to school season here in the United States. Yep, it's that time of year when people are getting backpacks and pencils and crayons and computers and shoes and clothes and whatever it is, you know, Kleenexes that they're supposed to take and donate to their classroom. I mean, there's just all kinds of things depending on the school and the ages and all of that. And it, I think it's actually a neat time of year. And even though I no longer have kids that I'm getting ready for school, I still enjoy some of the back to school sales. That can there can be some things there as a speaker and as a writer that I still want to be able to go in and take advantage of some of those sales. But you know, one of the things that happens as we look at this time of year is people are going to come together and students are going to come together and students are going to be in classrooms, or maybe you're homeschooling, but your student, your child might be in a co-op. You might be in a Christian school, public school, whatever it is. Maybe it's your students are going to be joining back up with the sports team that is going to launch this fall, or a speech and debate club, a chess club, I mean, gymnastics, cheer, whatever it is. There's a lot of activities that launch in this time of year that will continue for the next several weeks or months. And with that is going to come conflict. Yep, it's just part of the package. Because anytime you get people together, conflict is inevitable at some point. So the goal of life cannot be to try to eliminate or avoid conflict. That's kind of like trying to avoid oxygen because you might suck in something that's, you know, some contaminated air. Doesn't work out too terribly well to just cut off your entire air supply. But it's also in the coming together that we have the opportunity to develop meaningful friendships and relationships, and that our kids have the opportunities to do that as well. And learning how to navigate conflict, whether it's within a marriage between a parent and child of any age, students and teachers, teachers and administrators, I mean, whatever, there's just so many different relationships where conflict is going to occur sooner or later. And one of the things that we want to be as believers is we want to be relationally smart. And so today I'm going to begin a little mini series on some very practical ways, grounded in scriptural principles, that we can be relationally smart here on this earth. Now, before I launch into that, I am going to take a minute and just remind you, I love coming and speaking at Christian schools and homeschool groups, encouraging and equipping parents, both with biblical truths as well as with information about how the mind works and how we develop as humans, human development and dynamics, if you want to be kind of fancy-smancy about it. And I love being able to come. So you can check out information on my website, stephaniepresents.com. You can also just send me an email, stephanie@stephaniepresents.com, and we can chat about that. Okay, so let's look at this whole idea of conflict and communication that I spoke about in the very beginning of the podcast. Now, if you've been breathing for more than like 300 days in the United States, you have probably heard the phrase or you've read it somewhere that communication is the key to a great relationship. And I would say I beg to differ with that. I think it is one of the keys, but I don't think that it is often as significant as we want to give it credit for. Now, hear me out on this. It's not a matter that communication is irrelevant, not at all. As a matter of fact, we will be talking more about communication in a later episode. But we have focused so much on talking about the importance of communication techniques that we have missed out equally talking about something that is even more important, and that is expectations. Two people can have fantastic communication techniques. They can learn and practice the skill of reflecting back. They can use I statements rather than you statements. And these things have value and merit. But you know what? You can do all of that all day long, and you can still end up not having resolved any conflict. As a matter of fact, you could have even made your conflict worse. Why? Well, that's because we have to think in terms of, but what are we communicating about? And that always goes back to expectations. If you think of it like this, if you imagine like a house, and communication is the door, and there are techniques that we can use that are keys that unlock that door, and we open that door. But it's what's on the other side of that door that makes up the stuff of life. I don't live inside the doors of my house. I live in rooms in my house. Rooms that have doors, but I don't live in the door. The door just allows me to go in and out of the rooms. It allows me to close off the rooms to other people, to pets, to noise, to whatever. But it's the same way in our relationships. What's inside of our rooms is where we live. And that always comes down to our expectations. Sometimes it's easier for us to stay focused on developing communication techniques because there's a lot of techniques that we can learn that don't require us to have the same level of vulnerability and honesty that expectations require. So let's look a little bit about expectations. First of all, from just a biblical standpoint, always wanting to go back and to ground our principles and what we see from Scripture. Well, let's go back to the very beginning. The very first human relationship that existed is between Adam and God. And before there was the fall, before sin came into the world, God brought the animals that he had created to Adam, and he gave Adam this opportunity to participate in creation with him by naming the animals. Now, I'm not going to go off on the rabbit trail, although there's significance in really digging into that, because the power of names is something that is a spiritual principle. Our names aren't just labels that differentiate us from one person to the other. Our names have tremendous power. And maybe that's something that we'll talk about a little bit more in depth in the future. I know I've talked a little bit about that in the past, and the names that we place on ourselves have tremendous power in our lives. And so when God comes to Adam and has him to name the animals, he expresses the expectation to him. Yes, it's an opportunity. It's not this demand. It's an invitation. But he doesn't just line up all the animals and then like, well, let me explain to you why I made the giraffe with this long neck. Now, I'm not saying that God and Adam didn't have those conversations. Maybe they did. The Bible just doesn't record it. But what we do know is that it was clear to Adam what he was expected to do. He wasn't just left going, okay, this is a nice little zoo that we have going on here, God, but what exactly are you bringing me all these critters for? I mean, God communicates his expectation. And then when Adam and Eve, God walks them through the garden, and God walks Adam through the garden initially, and he points out to Adam all of the trees that are there. And he says, you can eat the fruit from all of these trees except for that one. Now, I'm just going to go on an aside here. And if you're a parent, I just want to point out, this is a wonderful parenting principle that you can see right here from the first chapters in Genesis. And that is, surround your kids with all the things that they can say yes to and minimize the things that they have to say no to. You see, God could have done just the opposite. He could have said, you see all these trees out here? You don't get to eat of any of those. You don't get to touch those. You don't get to eat of any of those. I mean, don't even look at them. But he could have said, you don't get to eat from any of these other trees. You can touch them, you can look at them, but you can't eat of any. You only get to eat from one. God could have done that, and he would have been totally right and justified in doing that. But he didn't. He is a God of abundance. He is a God whose heart is to bless and to create rich and diverse opportunities and abundance for us, his people. And he only says no to one tree. Now, there has been a swing in our culture in terms of parenting. And when I say culture, part of this relates to the broader culture. And but wait, what happens in the broader culture, have you noticed it doesn't just like stop at the doors of Christian homes and Christian churches? I mean, it does kind of work its way in. And we have moved from this mindset that dominated parenting, Christian parenting for a while, which was basically this idea that you've got to make sure that your kids can say no to this and that and this and that and this and that, kind of flipping the script of what God did with Adam and Eve in terms of the ratio of the one no tree to all the others that were yes trees, where it was like, you've got to say no to all these things, and you have a very narrow definition of what you can say yes to. And there was a mentality that went along with that, that that was somehow going to be what built someone's character and their ability to resist temptation. Well, that didn't work out so well. And part of that is, we can see, is that's just not the way that God deals with us, his people. And then what's happened is, as human nature has a tendency to do, we tend to like go from one extreme to the other. And now we have a parenting culture that has swung so far in the other direction that it basically has said, if you say no to your children, if there's any kind of no in their life, then you are going to harm them. And that's ridiculous. And it's not just ridiculous. It's not just a different parenting philosophy. It's a destructive parenting philosophy, because that doesn't align with how God has designed us as people as well. There was something very clear that God said no to, and that no had a significant consequence to it. It wasn't the equivalent of, well, okay, if you do decide you're going to eat of that tree of knowledge, you're going to, okay, well, you know, you're going to get a couple of stars taken off of your chart, and you're going to be in timeout for a couple of days, and, you know, whatever. I mean, the consequences were far more serious than that. And so we don't want to be guilty of swinging to the other extreme, which some people could look at and say, well, that's just lazy parenting when people don't want to set boundaries for their kids and teach them to be disciplined. Because it's not lazy parenting, because when you parent like that, you end up doing a whole lot more work than if you establish there are some no's in this world. And when parents have buy into this idea that no is somehow damaging to their child, one of the reasons that that is not going to serve the parent or the child well throughout life is because it doesn't align with the reality of the world, the way the world works. And our job as parents is to prepare our kids to engage with the real world, not some fake version of it, not some romanticized idealization of how we would like it to be. And the reality of life is there are no's in this world. Like, there's no speeding. There's things that you don't get to do, you know, like No, you don't get to go rob a bank. No, you don't get to haul off and slug your boss when they steal your idea and take credit for it. There are some no-nos in this world. And when we don't teach our children that in very real practical ways as kids, we set them up to not be able to function well in the real world. So God did have a no, but he expressed and he communicated his expectation clearly. He said, all these other trees you can eat from, this is the one you can't eat from. He didn't leave them. He didn't leave Adam and Eve guessing and wondering about what they were and were not supposed to be doing. He gave them a choice, but there was clarity in what he expressed to them. And we see that principle continue throughout all of Scripture. When God gave Moses the Ten Commandments, what was he doing? He was establishing, here are expectations about how you are supposed to conduct yourself and how you are supposed to live. He communicated those with clarity. Nobody was left wondering, gosh, I wonder what he means by thou shalt not steal. Got to think about that one. That one's a real mind boggler. We're going to have to, I don't know, maybe there's a cipher to figure that one out. I mean, nobody had to do that. There was incredible clarity of God's expectations. And that's one of the things, the principles that we can apply when we are in relationships with others. And so what do we have to do? Well, first of all, we recognize expectations is what either brings people together or creates conflict. The more that you have expectations that are aligned with what somebody else expects, then the more unity that you are going to have. To the degree that your expectations are different is the degree to which conflict will be created. And that's true whether it is in a job, it's in a friendship, it's in a parent-child relationship, it's in a marriage relationship. I mean, whatever relationship, it all goes back to the foundation is, what are the expectations here? Now, we've already seen from the beginning that God identified and expressed his expectations, and he has continued to do that throughout all of Scripture. And the greatest display of that, of course, was the coming of Christ. I mean, Christ modeled for us his expectations about how we're supposed to show up and to live in this world. And that was an act of the greatest amount of vulnerability that anyone has ever done. You know, we often think of Jesus as being someone of great power and wisdom and might and God, and that is absolutely true. But when Jesus came and took on human form, he made himself to come, God came into the likeness of man, there was a tremendous amount of vulnerability, not weakness. Weakness is not vulnerability. Those are not the same things, but vulnerability that he chose to step into. And it's the same for us. When we are honest about what our expectations are, just first of all with ourselves, because there's no point trying to communicate our expectations to somebody else if we haven't first identified them for ourselves. But in order to do that, that requires courageous honesty and vulnerability. The other thing that happens in order to identify and express expectations, one of the reasons that we can be very tempted to avoid doing that, even just with ourselves, not necessarily even just with other people, but just with ourselves, is because our expectations reveal what we really believe about what we owe others and what they owe us. Expectations reveals our priorities, our values, our beliefs. And again, expectations reveal, what do I really believe that I owe others? What are my responsibilities to and for others? And what do I really believe that someone else owes me? It all comes back down to expectations. Now, sometimes there are things that go around that are they sound good, on the surface level. But when you really look at them to see, do they stand up to introspection, they all fall apart. And one of those things that has gone around at different times is this idea that the goal in a relationship is to do away with our expectations. Well, we're just supposed to love without expectation. We're just supposed to be responsible for how we show up, and we're not to put any expectations on anybody else. And that is just utter nonsense. It's one of those ideas that does a lot of damage because on the surface level, it sounds beautiful, it sounds wonderful, and it can even sound very Christianese, but it doesn't hold up. It's not sustainable over a period of time. And the reality is because it's not aligned with truth. I mean, that's not anywhere in how God deals with us as people or how he tells us to deal with other people. God is very clear about setting out his expectations, and he has been from the beginning. He doesn't say, hey, the goal in a relationship with me is to have no expectations. God doesn't set that up for himself. He also doesn't say, hey, y'all, the goal for y'all down there is to not have any expectations. And once you get to the point where you don't have any expectations, then there will be peace on earth. That is not whatever, that is never what God says either. Rather, it is a matter of aligning our expectations with what God says our responsibilities are and what we owe others. And also being aware and mindful about what others owe us. You might be going, wait, other people owe us? I mean, isn't that going against the idea of unconditional love? Isn't that being selfish? No, not at all. When we accept that we are interdependent people and that the height of maturity is not our independence and it's not our ability to live separated from all other people, when we own that it is to live influenced by and influencing other people, then we realize that it's not just that I need to have expectations of myself. I need to make sure that the expectations that I have of others align with what is good, what is reasonable, what is right, and what is true. And unfortunately, so many times our conversations, our communication never gets down to the point that it hits that level of expectations. We end up talking one level up rather than getting down to the expectation level. It's like if I go out on the river and I'm in a kayak, I can take that paddle and I will be able to go somewhere if I take that paddle and I just drop it, 3 inches into the water. Okay, yeah, I can get some kind of movement there, but I'm not going to go fast and I'm not going to go far. I have got to be able to drop that paddle down deeply enough that I can really move that canoe because I'm pulling against the force of this water. Or if I'm wanting to back up, I've got to have enough depth there that covers the area of that paddle that I'm going to displace enough water. I'm going to create enough momentum that I can actually have movement. And sometimes in our relationships, we don't really have much movement. We don't really go anywhere. We just kind of go in circles or we're like, why can't we get any momentum here? I mean, we're talking and we're practicing all these communication techniques. But if we haven't first got to the level that we're talking about our expectations of ourselves and one another, then it's kind of the equivalent of we're just barely tipping our paddles into the water rather than really getting down deep enough that we can make progress and movement. So I just want to encourage you, really start thinking in all of your relationships, whether it's with a spouse, your kids as teachers, your pastor, your neighbor, your boss, your coworkers, what are the expectations that you have of yourself in that relationship? What are the expectations that you have of someone else? Because you have them, and the goal, again, is not to get rid of them. The goal is to be able to say, do these align with what is true, with what is right, with what is reasonable? Are there some I need to hang on to and I need to express? And are there some that it's like, oh, yeah, I guess that is kind of a little unreasonable, and I need to exchange that for a more reasonable expectation. So have the courage to get down to the expectation level in yourself and then in your communication. And that is one of the best ways that you can become relationally smart. All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up for today. We'll pick up and continue with this mini series next week. In the meantime, if you haven't already, would you just take a couple of seconds and just leave a short review? You can do that on your podcast player. It's a very easy thing to do. And that's a great encouragement to me. It helps other people to find the podcast as well. Helps me also to know what's resonating with listeners. And if you haven't, then make sure you go to the website, you sign up for my weekly newsletter, High Impact. You are going to be encouraged. You're going to get a fresh article every week. You're going to have resource recommendations. And it's just a way for us to connect on a more personal level. And it's easy if you ever look at it and then figure out, you know, this is just not for me. Hey, you know, unsubscribing is easy, but I doubt that that's going to be something that you're going to want to do. Because it's a newsletter that people really enjoy getting. And I, you know, just consistently hear from people that they're, whether it's a resource that I recommended that they got that really helped them, or it's something in the article that I wrote for that week that really ministered to them. And so I want you to be able to have that opportunity as well. You can do that on the website, stephaniepresents.com. All right, my friend, remember this, because it is absolutely true. You have an impact that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.